And good morning. Welcome to the KRFY News of the Week. This is our every Friday broadcast of things that have been happening around our town, the news of the week. And I'm Chris Bessler, today's host. My usual co-host, Jack Peterson, is off goofing around somewhere, having fun on a vacation. So he's not going to be speaking today. However, we do have Zach Hagedorn, editor at the Sandpoint Reader. Zach, thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Sansri Mitchell. And is it, what's the official title at the Reader?
Staff writer.
Staff writer.
MVP.
There you go.
MVP. That works. Yeah. Well, thank you both for being here. And we're going to touch on the local news headlines. And it was actually a relatively quiet news week.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Sansri, we were talking a little bit earlier that you guys were kind of scrambling to fill that Reader up this week.
Yes, we had to pull a lot from legislature, considering we usually budget a lot more for the county, but it was a pretty quiet week, yeah. Despite all the arguments.
Yeah, not having a county story is like, we didn't know what to do. We kind of sat around in the newsroom sort of shrugging at each other.
There's like a page or two that it's missing right there,
mm-hmm.
Because it's been such an ongoing conflict. Right. Why was there not county news?
Well, the only big thing that was on the agenda was a discussion of drones and the use of drones for assessing property. And that got cleared up pretty quickly because Assessor Englehart with the county and also Deputy Prosecutor Bill Wilson basically got up and said, the county does not use drones. They're not spying on you with drones. And if you saw a drone above your house, that was probably your neighbor having fun.
Right. Yeah. I think they call that a red herring.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, it is kind of disconcerting to see a drone flying around your house.
And, absolutely.
Haven't witnessed that myself, but I've seen drones flying around in towns like, who's watching us? So that's good to clear that up. Now, the county does use aerial photography, though, right?
Yes. So they do have a plane that's flying anywhere between 5,000 and 20,000 feet because they are legally required to do routine property assessment. And otherwise, if they are coming to assess your property, they will ask for permission to come on your land. If you refuse, they will go to your neighbor's property if they gave them permission or stand on a public road. But otherwise, that's your land and they're not going to step foot on it or put drone on it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, actually, that function is pretty important because mm-hmm. this is how they determine taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So... you got to give the assessor's office some slack, folks. They're just trying to do their job. Other things that went on around town, there was a city comp plan. Was it a workshop? What was that, Zach?
So it's the second in a series so far of two joint working sessions with the city council and the Planning and Zoning Commission. And this is part of the the long-running effort to update the comprehensive plan, which began in 2019. So to kind of back up a little bit, the plan has to be updated every 10 years
and it's
theoretically. Yeah. It's a 20-year vision for, you know, sort of how the community sees itself growing and then provides sort of rough guidance for developers and for future city officials to achieve that vision. You do it every 10 years. It's a 20-year vision. We started the process in 2019, you know, 10 years after the last plan. But then, of course, some things happened in 2020.
A virus.
A little virus happened, and we had to waylay the plan update for about 2 years. They picked it up in 2022, and they have written and rewritten all of these chapters. It's like a 300-page document if you add in the appendices. Planning and zoning's already gone through it. The city council was poised to accept it in October, but... decided to pull it back and said, we need more community input. So that resulted in some workshops in November and December. And then we had a working session, joint working session with the city council members and the Planning and Zoning Commission in February. And this is the second one we've had of that, where they go sort of line by line. And I can tell you, I listened to it for 2 hours. They made it through one chapter.
Yeah.
So if anyone's worried that they're not considering every line of the comp plan, I will disabuse you of that notion because they are considering every line of the comp plan. So they dealt with chapter 4, and that was housing and, oh no, sorry, that was land use and development. So obviously a big issue. And they suggested some changes, and those aren't really going to be put into practice until the city council considers it again. Mm-hmm. And we don't know when that's going to be. Mm-hmm. So could be months at this rate. But
before they take up the comp plan again?
Before the, it goes before the city council.
Before, okay.
As a final draft, right. Like for a full vote.
Right, right.
And I think Mayor Jeremy Grimm is aware that people really want to see this codified so that we can start talking about the zoning that emanates from that document.
Yeah, the comprehensive plan is really a vision document.
Right.
And the zoning is what really, mm-hmm. as you said, codifies things.
Yeah. And
sets the rules.
And they're very, very clear during these discussions that this comp plan is aspirational. That's the word they use constantly. Aspirational visions. Mm-hmm. But it's important to have because then you give a direction. The big news that sort of like hid within that meeting was that Amy Tweeten, our city planner, is no longer with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, that's the news.
So her last...
At least it's news to us, right?
It was news to me. Yeah. Mayor Grimm, at the beginning of that working session, said, because we have no planning staff at the city, I will now be filling that role. So we no longer have a city administrator. Mm-hmm. So Jeremy Grimm, the mayor, is fulfilling that role, and now we no longer have a city planner, mm-hmm. which he is now filling. But we are going to be contracting with Darren Fluke, who was our longtime contracted city planner during the interim after Aaron Qualls left in December of 2020 and before we hired Amy Tweeten. So
yeah, Amy has only been two years.
2 years,
yeah.
Almost exactly 2 years. Yeah, she came on in January 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, one thing about our mayor, he does have a planning background. He was
right.
The planning director for quite a number of years with the mm-hmm. city. So it's not like he's not well familiar with the whole planning department
right.
needs, and I assume the city is now going to be putting that out for advertising that position.
I would hope so. Darren Fluke he did well for us, as an interim for a while, but I don't think he is potentially interested in being our full time planner. I mean, he lives in Boise, so we probably ought to have a planner who lives here.
Yeah, I work better that way.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
So,
okay, well, that's...
No decisions, but big news.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. That did turn up some big news. And the other kind of the bigger city thing that happened this week, I guess you could say it was big. There was an open house for the James Russell Sports Center that was held Wednesday for people to come and take a look at the layouts. And, Sansri, you were on hand for that, I believe.
I was, yes. It was a fun little mixer, just... quite a big turnout, members of the community showing up and discussing. They had a little written form that you could submit comments, questions, and they would be answered by the planning department, the designers, Jeremy Grimm, depending on what your question is, I suppose. But it was mostly just talking about the pickleball and tennis court layouts. So there are going to be 14 pickleball courts for all the pickleball lovers out there, 4 tennis courts, and... then the only other big news was that they decided on a blue court surface with white and light blue lines. So, exciting stuff.
Shades of Boise State.
Right, yeah, the Smurf turf.
The Smurf turf. Yeah, I actually got to that mm-hmm. late, so all the official stuff was done. And there were, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 people hanging around chatting.
Mm-hmm.
My 2 cents was, why don't we also consider the uses that aren't just those two court sports,
mm-hmm.
because we definitely have facility needs for basketball players and volleyball players and indoor soccer and lacrosse. And it seems like that could be set up to accommodate those things more.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that once they get into operations, they, it's a big building without any restrictions in that interior space, that mm-hmm. there could be some adjustments that way. I don't know if they speak to any of these other sports?
They are including some removable nets dividing the court that could be converted, I assumed, for sort of badminton, volleyball, what have you. And mostly they discussed indoor walking in the winter. They didn't mention any kind of basketball hoops or any other gear that would be going in there. So it was primarily focused on tennis and pickleball.
Well, I think that was kind of baked into the whole project from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
right? Is that James E. Russell, the man, was a tennis, like passionate tennis player.
So, yeah, but I
spoke with the family, and he was also a basketball player when he was in high school. So, you know, Andy, I think he may have coached basketball for a while too. My sense is this facility will end up, we'll see how the community actually needs use within it, and hopefully down the line adjustments could be made if they want to accommodate those other sports.
I will be very interested to see how busy this place actually is after about, you know, a year or two. Well, I'm sure it'll be very busy when it first opens. But
16 pickleball courts.
That's a lot. That's a lot of pickleball.
Yeah, that's a lot of pickleball. Yeah.
If you've seen the other courts around, like out in Hope, out in Ponderay, they are so busy all the time.
Yeah, I haven't actually observed that very much. I've played pickleball. You guys play pickleball?
No.
My mom does. So I support her in this.
Okay, mom. You got some support. I've played a couple times. It's pretty fun. But I will say the age demographic is definitely on the older side.
I wasn't going to go there, but yeah, that's kind of why I have never played it. I mean, you
aren't old enough.
I probably have another 10 years. In 10 years, I'll probably be doing
it. Well, actually, it's fun for anybody of any age, I think. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely an older folks sport. And I'd like to see this. I know the tennis players have a lot of young people, obviously. The tennis teams will be using the facility too, but I like to see the facility used for all these other sports that have a lot of younger people playing them, and maybe it'll evolve out that way at some point. Well, the other thing locally, actually, we were speaking a little bit earlier, and we want to talk about what's going on with the Idaho legislature because it was a kind of a slow local week, but I thought the last story I was going to mention was that today, 5 p.m., is the deadline for candidates to file for any of our local or state legislative offices if they want to get on the ballot. And you guys had a story on that.
Right.
There was actually, I think, one new name I saw that I wasn't familiar with, that Steve Johnson has filed for Legislative District 1 Idaho Senate as a independent. There weren't a lot of new names that we haven't seen already mentioned as being candidates as of when you guys went to press.
Right. Yeah. So, Cornell Razor running for District 1 House Seat A as a Republican, he would be in the primary against Mark Sauter, who's our incumbent. He hadn't actually officially filed as of our press time.
Oh, mm-hmm.
But
he's announced.
Basically. He's sort of announced.
Oh, really?
He has a website.
Yeah.
I looked him up on the Secretary of State's campaign finance disclosure website. He's got a treasurer. He's bringing in money. I asked him directly if he was running, and he said he would give me his answer around March 15th, and he didn't. So I'm just assuming that he is running. In the piece, you might see not officially filed but announced. Same with Lewis Marshall for Bonner County Prosecutor, unopposed. He hadn't officially filed as of the 14th, but I had it on very good assurance from the county clerk that he would be filing.
That he's going to file, yeah. Okay, so we'll see what pans out. There's always, it seems, an individual or two or three that just wait till the very last minute to get their name in the hat. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some additional candidates that pop up here before 5 p.m. today.
Well, and one thing that I'm really excited about looking at this slate is that we have Republicans, we have Constitution Party people, Libertarian Party, we have a Democrat running for U.S. House, we've got Republicans, Independents, and Democrats running for Senate and House. No Democrats running for the Senate, but we do have some Democrats in the House race, which is unusual, and Independents, and the Commissioners.
Yeah.
We have an Independent, Glenn LeFay, running for Commissioner District 3.
Yeah, and that was a new one too as well. And I wasn't able to find any candidate website or even
Glenn, I don't know if, I mean, longtime locals will know Glenn.
Yeah.
He's a radio personality. I think he used to work at the 219 Lounge.
Yeah, he's an occasional letter to the editor, writer.
Yeah, very smart guy. He's very engaged. He's a wonderful guy. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy to see a longtime local who deeply cares about these issues. Mm-hmm. Actually putting his hat in the ring. And as an independent, he's going to not be in the primary, of course. Mm-hmm. So we won't see his name on the ballot till the general.
Right.
So he's almost guaranteed.
He's guaranteed to make it to the general.
Which is a smart way to do it, right? I mean, you avoid the whole primary rigmarole and just go straight to the November ballot.
Steve Johnson, in the last election, he because he ran as a Democrat, he couldn't get on the ballot as an independent.
Right.
After he lost.
Well, the write-in candidacy.
Yeah. That's right. He staged a write-in candidacy. And for that Senate seat, he got, 30-40% of the vote.
He did quite well. That was almost historically well for a write-in. And that was against Scott Herndon after, he defeated Jim Woodward in the primary.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So now we have kind of a repeat shaping up here in the District 1 Senate race with Herndon as the incumbent now.
Yes.
Defending against Jim Woodward, who was the senator that he unseated. And now we've got Steve Johnson, who was the protest write-in.
Yeah.
Entering the race
as an independent.
Independently. Yeah. So we've got all three of the same characters, but they're all going to be at the same time, sort of. So whoever wins that primary is going to face Steve Johnson,
right.
In November.
Yep. Okay, a couple other election notes. So at 5 p.m., folks can actually Sandpoint Alliance election page. We're going to be updating that with any that's my day job at Sandpoint Alliance, with any late entries to the races here after 5 p.m. today. So you could check that out to see anything there. And of course, the reader will have a story on it next week. Did want to mention a couple other things. Next Wednesday, we're going to have on the morning show, Michael Rosedale, the county clerk and our chief elections officer, is going to be in with some of his staff. We're going to be talking about making sure you're registered and ready to vote in the next election and what you need to know about voting. That'll be next Wednesday, the 20th, on the morning show here. And then this might be news to you guys. I'm not sure, but we are going to be sponsoring KRFY with the Sandpoint Reader and Sandpoint Online are going to be sponsoring a candidates forum. And we got the date set for that. It's going to be April 30th. That's a Tuesday. And it's going to be at the Sandpoint High School Auditorium. We're waiting to secure that spot. It's actually the best place to have a forum because it accommodates the most people and it has a good audio visual setup there. So mark that down, April 30th, candidates forum. We're going to be covering we'll have candidates there for all the contested races at minimum. And we'll probably would allow, even if there are some uncontested races still at that point, of those, the incumbents or the folks that are running for those uncontested spots would give a chance to get up and talk to their constituents as well.
And in the interim, we're going to have, I'm sure, candidate questionnaires, as we always do. So even if people are in sort of an uncontested race or running as an independent or whatever, we're still going to give them an opportunity to kind of say who they are and what they're about.
Yeah.
So even though they might not appear at the forum, they will be in print
in
the questionnaires.
Yeah.
And I don't know when we're going to do that, but it's probably going to be in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're going into a meeting after this, so we'll probably figure it out today and we'll let you know.
Scheduling. Yeah. It's all about scheduling. So, with that, let's turn to the state legislature. It was a quiet news week here, but the legislature is really gearing up because they're, maybe 2 or 3 weeks away from adjournment at this point. They've got a lot of stuff that's bills that have been proposed. In fact, I just counted it up. The Idaho Statesman, by the way, has a good resource for me anyways. It's a bill tracker. You could Google Idaho Statesman Bill Tracker, and they track every piece of legislation that gets introduced as it works its way through both committees, and then if they make it out of committee into either the House or the Senate. And right now they list 76 bills that are in play. So, Zach, can you give us a rundown on those 76?
So where do I begin?
How many fingers do you have?
Yeah, not 76 fingers.
Yeah. But let's just maybe try to touch on ones we think would be of particular interest up here.
I think that, Representative Souter wrote a legislative update for us this week. Something that I really appreciate that he does regularly for us is provide sort of like
some insights on the way things are going through the legislature.
And it's great that he does that. And the gist of his update this week was that, we're sort of barreling toward potentially the end of the session. In a separate story from Idaho Capital Sun, they estimate that the session's probably going to gavel out of session on the 29th. So we do have a couple weeks left, or a week or more.
And those predictions often
Who knows?
Go long.
I remember one year we were in session until May one time. So.
But this is an election year. They have more motivation to
That's always always the thing, is that when you're running for primaries, you want to do your business, you want to make your big show and then you want to go home as quick as you can and brag about what you did and then win re-election.
Yes.
So that might account for why we have such an active legislative calendar, is people are trying to jam as many bills as they can through to go home and run for office. Well, Sauter, he picked up on a few things. He says, you know, before the session ends, there will be some controversial bills to vote on. So the library bill he mentioned, you know, House Bill 710.
And does that one move through one of the chambers? Was that approved by one of the chambers?
Yes. So we went to press before this happened, and I guess, was it yesterday? It actually made it through the House. And this one...
It's the harmful library materials
bill. It's the thing we've been fighting about for about 3.5 years now. I feel like it's been 3 sessions. This has come up and been defeated. You know, Brad Little, I think, famously even vetoed one version of this bill at one point. This one looked like it had a lot longer legs, in part because it was being sponsored by, you know, top Republican leaders, as opposed to sort of the fringe kind of...
The more extremist ones.
Yeah. I mean, when legislation comes from sort of that right field, oftentimes it will either make it through or it will be destroyed in committee. There's like no middle ground. Nobody wants to debate it. You know, either it gets approved or it doesn't. This one was much more of a sort of traditional Republican leadership bill. And it does the same thing. I mean, you can now sue the library if you don't like the stuff that your kids are checking out. But you can only sue for $250 plus any relief available by the law. So that's going to be a big fight, I'm sure. And the composition of the Idaho legislature is different this time around, in that the House has always been more willing to take up these kind of culture war bills. And the Senate's always been the check on that. Well, that's changed.
Yeah, the Senate actually is a little bit more conservative.
The Senate is more conservative, yes. Mm-hmm. So if this gets through the House, which it did, you know, if a bill gets through the House and it's one of these culture war kind of things, you have a much likelier chance of it getting through the Senate than you did previously. And so really, Governor Little is going to be the ultimate arbiter here.
Right. But he could be overridden as well. So
right.
if he does veto the bill, and I think last time it came within one vote of being overridden.
Yeah, and it did come within one vote. And Mark Sauter specifically, I think, was kind of, you know, unfairly blamed, quote unquote, for being that one vote. Of course, mathematically, that's a
stupid... It's anybody that voted to upheld the
It's veto. A ridiculous argument. Yeah. Like, I mean, it could be anybody, but yeah. Representative Sauter has stood against these library bills in the past, as has the governor. This is clearly a priority for the Republican leadership to get this bill through, and I think it's 100% a primary election type of bill. It's been demonstrably proved over and over again that there is no problem that they're addressing here. Like, they're addressing a problem that doesn't exist. They're electioneering with this bill.
Yeah.
And I think any honest person has to admit that. So that's the big one.
The library's coming under that kind of heat. Is like, it's a little hard for me to assimilate, because we have the internet now.
Right.
And there's so much really, really, I mean, we want to talk about harmful materials.
Yeah.
The stuff that's on the internet that's freely available, and, you know, the whole screening process there is, you know, are you 21? Is the question that pops up. And of course, any kid that's 12 years old could say, yeah, I'm 21, and then go on to see really horrible things. So it seems unbalanced in terms of trying to put this kind of restriction, especially when they are going to be enabling parents to actually sue library people, library staff, or the library itself. So,
which has been the problem all along. It's why Governor Little vetoed the last version of this. He says it's creating a library bounty system, you know, where it's incentivizing people to basically make money on suing libraries. And you look at the Idaho State Legislature's definition of harmful material, and that's one of the big issues too, is that the definition that they have encoded into the law is very broad. So harmful material includes any depiction of homosexual relationships.
Which
I mean,
there are those relationships. It is in the real world.
Yeah. So the remit that an individual would have to sue a library is so broad under this bill that every librarian who's testified, and everyone who's testified against this bill has been against it, right? I mean, like, no one is in favor of this bill except for the people who are running for office on it. So a sad thing that has happened. We'll see what happens going forward. But the other stuff going on at the legislature is, you know, the school tax credit is something that Representative Sauter brought up, House Bill 447. One of his big things that he ran on when he ran for his first term was, you know, sort of career technical training for Idaho students. So he's very much in favor of these things, you know, providing financial support for kids to go to school for trades. So the Idaho Launch Program is one of those things as well. That's moving through.
House Bill 447, you say?
Yeah.
That has to do with school vouchers too, though, right?
Well, that would have granted parents tax credit against their Idaho taxes, right, for going to school. But his big thing is the Launch Program. That's what he wants to see.
Yeah, and that's a program that was proposed by the governor, is that right? Yeah,
the Idaho Workforce Development Council.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then there's the school facilities bill. It's House Bill 521. It's going to provide $1.5 billion over 10 years for funding school districts for repair and replacement of school buildings. I think the governor came in with a $2 billion bill
right
on this. Mm-hmm. The legislature is kind of countered with this $1.5 billion bill, and that one's been passed by the House and gone to the Senate, where, again, it's a little more conservative in there,
right.
So
mm-hmm.
It's hard to say how that might end up coming through there. There's one bill that I've been interested in, and that's the Concealed Guns in Schools bill. It's House Bill 415. It would allow public school employees with concealed weapons permits to bring them to their schools. The House passed that bill, and it's been referred to the Senate State Affairs Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's a pretty good chance that one could come through the Senate as well. And then again, we would have to see what the governor has to say
right.
about
mm-hmm.
allowing people to bring concealed guns into the schools.
If I was a betting person, I would say that the governor is probably not going to be in favor of that.
Mm-hmm. You would think so. However, you know, Second Amendment rights is such a big topic for his constituency.
It's the third rail of Idaho politics, really.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
you can't.
Of course, the governor is in his second term, so he's kid. Theoretically be free to act, you know, without as many mm-hmm. political mm-hmm. considerations. Although we're not term limited here, are we, the governor?
No.
So he might want to go for a third term.
I would be surprised.
Hard to say.
I don't know. I'm not. Well, I don't know Brad's mind.
Cecil Andrus did four terms, right?
Yeah.
In two different sets of serving. Mm-hmm. So that's possible, I guess, that he might want to go again. Well, what else? And there's a ton of other bills here. What else would you want to remark on, Zach or Sansuri?
Well, I know it was exciting to see that the Idaho bill expanding birth control was headed to the governor's desk. So that would give women the option to have more than 1 to 3 months worth of birth control, which is great for people living in rural areas, for students who are maybe, you know, far away from home, far away from their doctor, and of course, it's important with our current near total abortion ban, mm-hmm. But also, I mean, I think a lot of people forget about all of the other good things that birth control does, helping regulate your periods, helping clear up any acne so that you're not scarred for mm-hmm. life. I mean, it has a lot of benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a seemingly positive thing that came through, and the governor's probably going to be okay with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was so happy to see this happen in part politically as well, mm-hmm. because it was a 34-35 vote. So again, one vote made the difference in this.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bill brought by, you know, Senator Melissa Wintrow, Democrat of Boise. So it's a women's reproductive health care bill passed by one vote proposed by a Democrat. Like, this is like the unicorn of Idaho legislature. Like,
yeah.
It's just an example of how we actually can do things in Idaho that are positive for mm-hmm. people, and we can do it between the parties.
Mm-hmm.
But it often comes down to that one vote, you know, whoever that is.
Yeah. It's amazing how close some of these votes are. Anything else? We're about out of time. Anything else on the legislative front that either you guys would like to mention? I was happy to see that there were a couple of different domestic terrorism bills that would have basically defined domestic terrorism as that had to be done in cooperation with some kind of foreign entity.
Right.
And those bills both have died in committee. Mm-hmm.
That was definitely a bridge too far for a lot of people.
You would think so, especially up here where we actually had basically domestic terrorism going on with we had the Aryan Nations, but there were some offshoots of that, which they were out bombing stuff in the Northwest. Right. Yeah.
I mean, I forget who it was. It was one Democratic lawmaker down in Boise who testified against this bill and had a great quip, and I'm going to murder it, but it was essentially like, so you're telling me that we can't have terrorism in Idaho unless you get an email from Hamas first? Yeah. It's like, no, I mean, it's just silly. It's ridiculous.
It didn't make much sense. But you know what? Sometimes these bills, they come back year after year. We may see more on that.
Right. Well, I'm sure we'll see that bill again.
Yeah. Well, we are out of time now. And I want to say thank you again to Zach Hagedorn and Sansri Mitchell from The Reader for coming in to illuminate us on these local stories as well as the state legislative issues. There's a ton of things happening down in the legislature. Again, you can check out the Idaho Statesman. Of course, our Reader and B here in town, they are touching on some of the bills. And the Idaho Capital Sun, which you can get to online as an excellent source as well. So, the Statesman, the Reader, the Capital Sun, the B, they all try to be balanced and objective on these things. So good sources for that. Anything you guys want to throw in before we say goodbye?
No, thanks for listening, I guess. I would say.
Okay.
Happy almost St. Patrick's Day.
There you go.
Okay. Well, thank you all for tuning in today, and we're going to get back to Otto's Eclectic Mix now.
Coming to you from downtown Sandpoint, this is Otto's Eclectic Mix on 88.5 KRFY.